Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Carol Harnett. I'm the president of the Council for Disability Awareness, and this is our show, the Financial Health and Income Network. And I am very excited to launch what we will hope will be a continuing series with people who are working and living with chronic conditions, illnesses, and diseases. And I am so pleased to say that our first topic will be on endometriosis. Now, I have to say I've worked in and around healthcare my whole life and worked around the data in healthcare my entire career. And I have never thought about endometriosis separately as a separate category. And what brought it to my attention is my guest, which is Tanya Jacobson. She is a nurse who has a master's degree in science and biology and is also a certified nurse anesthetist. And as my life crosses over, I often put firewalls for different parts of my life. Tanya is also my cycle bar instructor. And that is how I came to know her. But she did something that I think has a high degree of impact for everyone around health, and particularly for women with endometriosis. And that is that during the month of March, which is an awareness month for endometriosis, she shared publicly through her Instagram account her experience with endometriosis and a lot of very important facts. The one that captured me the most is that 1 in 10 women in the United States have endometriosis, which is the same rate as the diabetes rate in the United States. And when we think about the amount of time and energy that we put around diabetes, which we should, we don't put any of that time and energy around endometriosis. So, Tanya, thank you so much for being willing to join us today and talk with us and educate us on this topic.
Absolutely, Carol. Thank you so much for having me. This is an extremely important topic for everybody, but obviously near and dear to my heart with personal experience.
So saying that, I want to turn a lot of the show over to you. I would love you to start, if you don't mind, first of all, with grounding people with a definition of what endometriosis is, and then your story as it relates to that.
Okay. So endometriosis, by definition, is a systemic disease that occurs when tissue that normally lines the inside of your uterus is found elsewhere in the body, mostly in the pelvis or the pelvic cavity, but it can also appear on the bladder, on the bowel, on lungs, up into the diaphragm, and even the brain in worst-case scenarios. It causes pain, organ dysfunction, and infertility. So the cause of endometriosis is unknown, but there are many theories surrounding it. Genetics, stem cells, blood and lymph system distribution are all possibilities. Inflammation is a key factor, and they believe that maybe some environmental toxins may be linked to it. So again, no definitive cause, and the diagnosis, unfortunately, takes a very long time. As Carol mentioned, the prevalence is extremely high. It's 1 in 10 women. So if you yourself don't have it, absolutely somebody you know has it, or may not even know that they have it, but are experiencing signs and symptoms of having endometriosis. A lot of people ask why it takes so long to diagnose, and it's mainly because most obstetrics and gynecology doctors themselves don't even know that much about it. The average patient will see 8 to 10 doctors before they receive an actual diagnosis. Years and years and years of pain and suffering. Many patients are told that it's in their head, that it's just IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, because so many of us have so many bowel symptoms that go along with us. It's confused to be a GI issue. So you might be sent away from your GYN down to a gastroenterologist and go through every process and procedure known to man for that. And really, that's not the initial cause. So a lot of confusion, pain, it becomes a mental battle and game also for many patients, and it's very frustrating. So I can back up and talk about my story. I would say that this whole thing probably started for me when I started menstruating. So at the age of 16, I got my first period. Heavy, heavy bleeding. I missed many days of high school. I was fatigued. I would get headaches. And my mother actually had a history of very heavy periods and had a hysterectomy at the age of 30 because of just the heavy bleeding. Couldn't handle it anymore, basically. And at the time, whether they knew or not that she had endo, it has really been left to be discovered, but it doesn't matter. They did a hysterectomy to treat it, and that's all I knew. So my mom kind of just said, yeah, I had really bad periods too, and we went about business and life. So I moved to college. The pain was worse. I would be knocked out for at least a week at a time, in addition to the week of premenstrual symptoms. I finally started seeing a GYN early in college who suggested birth control. She diagnosed me with menstrual migraines and thought that if we could even out my hormone swings, that I could prevent my migraines. And then obviously if I wasn't bleeding, then I wouldn't have as many of the pain and symptoms from cramping and bleeding. So I went on birth control early on, probably by the time I was 19, and stayed on birth control for about 7 years. So I came off birth control in about 2008, and we can talk a little bit more about how birth control can suppress the endometriosis and symptoms later, but came off birth control in 2008. And I, you know, without really remembering too much, I think just vaguely in general, I just always felt crappy around my period. I was exhausted. There was probably days, many days, where I called out of work. The bleeding was so intense that, I mean, I would have to take extra clothes with me everywhere I went because I would easily bleed through what I had on. And again, was just always told it was normal. My GYN was even like, some people just get this. This is normal. Offered me narcotics to deal with the pain. Never took them. I'm not a type of person that would even take ibuprofen regularly. So I spent a lot of time in bed, a lot of time sleeping with heating pads and just dealing with it. And this continued for years and years and years. And then I think the next step in my journey came when my husband and I decided to start trying for a family. So probably around 2014, we became more active in trying. Even though I had been off of birth control since 2008, we are obviously not preventing pregnancy, but it hadn't happened. But 2014 is when we started to try a little bit more actively. And I was noticing a lot more left lower quadrant pain. And I think once you become very hyper-focused on your schedule and looking at a calendar all the time, you start to become very in tune with your body. And I was just noticing so many things. So I sat down and talked to my GYN about it. And she said, you know, well, let's start getting some labs. We can do some ultrasounds. We can rule out cysts, et cetera, et cetera. So at the time, I didn't have any signs or symptoms of ovarian cysts other than just pain. And it seemed to be focused in my left lower quadrant the most. Labs came back and showed that I had a low AMH, which is an anti-Müllerian hormone. This test is fairly new. They've been using it maybe 10 to 12 years. So again, about 6 years ago or 5 years ago, however long it was, I got this information. My GYN didn't feel that comfortable with dealing with it. She said, you know, with this information, it means you have a low ovarian reserve, and I'm not really sure how to treat you moving forward. I need to send you to a fertility specialist. So obviously devastating news, not what you want to hear when you're just starting your journey. But I thought, you know, great, this is a specialist, somebody who's going to listen maybe a little bit more to my symptoms and put a little bit more thought into what's going on with me and my cycle and what has been going on for years. So we went on that journey and have been on that journey for the past 4 years, and it has been equally as devastating and frustrating. But it was during that time that we all as a team made the decision that I probably most likely had endometriosis. The only problem was the only way you can diagnose endometriosis is invasive. So you have to have a diagnostic laparoscopy in order to go in there and get a sample of tissue to send to pathology to diagnose. So after, you know, a couple of years of frustration and a lot of changes in my cycle, very short cycles, another thing to add in there is after being told we wouldn't conceive naturally, I did conceive naturally, but unfortunately sustained a miscarriage at about 10 to 11 weeks. Mm. So after that point, my cycle seemed to be even more sporadic and painful, and it was then I finally said, okay, I have to do something, so let's have surgery. So in 2017, I had my first surgery by a fertility specialist who claimed that he could fix my endometriosis and get me pregnant. So I trusted, and I went through surgery. Within 3 months, my symptoms were worse than they had been before. I was in a very ugly place mentally and emotionally, and I was begging for birth control again because I said, I can't continue feeling like this. I'm not myself. It hurts every day. It went from being painful a week to 2 weeks out of the month to now it was 3-4 weeks out of the month. There were very few good days. I was keeping a calendar. I was keeping food diaries. It was consuming my life, and it was miserable. So I begged and pleaded for birth control, and he talked me out of it because he said, you know, you're looking to start a family. And I said, I understand that, but this isn't, you know, working. So instead, he put me on Clomid, and I took a dose of Clomid hoping to get pregnant, and instead I ended up getting a grapefruit-sized cyst, and luckily I did not have surgery to get rid of it, but endured many, many days of pain until it rectified itself. After that, I foolishly put myself on a course of DHEA in hoping of that improving my egg supply and getting pregnant once again, all not really realizing that those are the worst things you can do for endometriosis. So by the fall of 2017, I was just in a really bad place. It was not good for my relationships. It was not good for my marriage. I knew that I needed to do something. I just didn't know what I needed to do. And then, as fate would have it, one of my neighbors and I were talking one day. We had just built a house in a new development, and she was a new neighbor, and we were talking about infertility. She mentioned that she had endometriosis as well, and she led me down the path of Nancy's Nook, which is an endometriosis education forum on Facebook that literally changed my life. I went on there. I did reading for a couple of hours every day. I learned more than I have ever learned about endometriosis in my entire life in about 4 hours, and it changed my life. It was Nancy's Nook who educated me, who ultimately led me to my surgeon, who performed excision surgery, which is the gold standard for treatment right now. And I had surgery last March and have felt like a new person ever since then.
Wow. That's, you know, as I'm listening, you probably heard me at points like gasping because it's incredible to listen to in one fell swoop. I can't imagine what that was like to live through.
I try to keep it as condensed as possible, but it was many, many years of suffering and many years going in the wrong direction. I mentioned keeping food diaries. I changed my diet so many times. I mean, I had gone gluten-free, dairy-free. It was right around that time that I actually got pregnant. So part of me was like, wow, is that what it took? And then eventually went vegan, had cut out all meat. So if you read a little bit more about endometriosis, you realize that they encourage an anti-inflammatory diet. So a lot of that is getting rid of red meat. And so my husband and I even tried vegan for a while, and none of this was helping any of my symptoms. I mean, it was basically just torturing me more mentally because it was, you know, consuming. So I talked about meeting this surgeon who basically changed my life, and it was basically excision surgery is really what changed my life. It was the appropriate treatment. So my first surgery was ablation, which means they go in there and they burn the tissue. They don't actually get rid of it. It just burns it and kills it. But the tissue, they describe it like an iceberg. So the tissue you see that's bad, the endometriosis that you see, is there, but it's much deeper than that. So the part of the iceberg you don't see below it is actually the problem. So you burn what you see, but you leave what you don't, and then it just continues to grow. And since you've been in there basically irritating it, making it more angry, it becomes worse. So that's why when I had my first surgery, within 3 to 4 months, I was feeling worse than I did before. It's almost like we made it angry. So until I went in to the correct surgeon and had the proper procedure done, my symptoms weren't going to get any better. So since having excision surgery, I was in surgery for 4 hours. I had moderate endometriosis. I did not have it on my diaphragm, thank God. But it was on, you know, my entire pelvic orifice. It was on both ovaries, wrapped around ligaments. So I had this right leg pain that nobody ever paid any attention to but me. You know, I would limp from day to day, and I would work out, and I would have to take, you know, 1 to 2 weeks off of my workouts because my right leg was bothering so much. And when I found a surgeon who ended up helping me, he didn't even bat an eye. As soon as I said right leg pain down my back, he was like, oh, yeah, your ligaments are involved. And sure enough, when he went in there, the endometriosis was wrapped around my urethrosacral ligaments. So he had to, you know, dig down into there and clean that all out as well. And I haven't had any leg pain since surgery.
You know, you're generous to share this. I know that when we look at data for why people go out of work, and we look at their health data and their, and we call it disability data, but it's not the disability people think about. It's like when we say disability data, we're almost always talking about, you know, illnesses or injuries that people have. Ablations, right, we're seeing both in endometriosis, but we're seeing a lot of it in women, perimenopausal women who are having difficulty with heavy bleeding. So it's interesting to, and it isn't always successful. It is successful sometimes, but I did just a more background reading so I could ask you intelligent questions. And I found, I read about excision surgery and found and was disappointed to find if there's a limited number of surgeons in the U.S. who have the expertise to do this surgery. So once
yes,
you
I think
find
the
out, you
described it at about 150, I think, worldwide.
Worldwide. Yeah, I think there's about 100 in the U.S. is what I saw. And when you think about it, I assume they're clustered in bigger geographic areas. So I think about women who this might be a good solution for, or at least a strategy to manage it for, who may have to travel to see somebody who's able to do this, and which is, of course, concerning because that may exclude, you know, women of certain means to be able to do that. So that always concerns me. Now, I actually didn't ask this to you before, you know, we started this show, or even when we've talked about this a little bit, but I think you referenced in one of your social media that there is some insurance limitations for some of the procedures. Did I remember that correctly?
Yeah. So, and you know, I'm going to be very careful with how I speak to this because I am not a professional in the industry world at all. I can only speak to my personal experience, and I actually have a girlfriend who's really going through a very frustrating situation herself with insurance regarding this. So I can say from my experience, yes, my surgeon was out of state, so he was technically out of network, which is true for many women who are searching to find an endometriosis expert to treat them, because they are very few and far between, and many of them are grouped together. Like you said, we're fortunate in New England to have New York, Massachusetts, and Maine all have certified surgeons who are experts in excision surgery, but unfortunately your insurance does restrict you to being able to go out of state. So lucky for me, my insurance at the time had an out-of-network option. So the hospital, the lab, and the anesthesia services were partly covered by my insurance. Now the surgeon himself is paid out of pocket simply because he doesn't get reimbursed for the procedure. And this is where I'm going to be very careful with how I speak, but how I understand it is that there basically are no CPT codes for the excision surgery itself. They will lump it into the same category as ablation. So my surgery was 4 hours long. On average, my bowel was not involved, but many women do have bowel involvement, which can sometimes involve a colorectal surgeon as well. So if you're in there four to eight hours, sometimes 10 hours, if you're having diaphragm involvement as well, and you're only getting reimbursed for an ablation procedure, which can be done in about an hour, you're losing a lot of money. That's a lot of time, energy, you know, expenses being put out that you're not getting reimbursed for. So I believe that's why many of these surgeons require out-of-pocket pay. So my surgeon was
amazing.
Yeah, you
have to save.
Exactly. He offered a payment plan. He, you know, you spoke about people traveling. He gets patients from all over the world. He had patients flying from India the week that I met him. He's been doing this for 30 plus years. So he is seeing people worldwide. And it's unfortunate because not everybody has the means to be able to do this. And when I was actually going through the process of finding a surgeon and setting up surgery, I had befriended somebody through social media who lives in California. And she was suffering. She was suffering so much, and she could not find a surgeon out there who was local that was in network that would take her insurance. And she was fighting the good fight. She was appealing every time I turned around, and she was just hoping and praying that she'd be able to find some loophole to be able to allow her to have surgery. And I can proudly say that today she did get surgery. She's been, I think excision surgery was in December. But I was at the point where I was like, oh my God, I need to start saving money and fly her out here to find my surgeon, because after I had surgery, I felt so much better. I want every person who's experiencing this pain to find somebody who can help them, because they deserve it. But back to the insurance question again, my girlfriend is experiencing the same thing. She's had three ablation surgeries locally here at one of our local hospitals, and it's not working for her, obviously. And she needs excision. Her insurance has denied her twice to go see my surgeon in Maine.
Wow.
So she's still fighting, still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I can. I'll just add a quick point. I mean, I've been in and around insurance for the last 10 plus years of my life, in addition to what I do. And so I just always use this as a good commercial for people when you're going through either an open enrollment process, if you're employer offers health insurance, well, they're all required to over a certain size. Or if you have to go into the individual market yourself, it's really important, I say in general, to make sure you're in a preferred provider PPO selection, because at least when you go out of network, it's pricey. You know, you do have to do a much more significant copay until you reach your out-of-pocket maximum. At least it gives you options. And and I would say that not just for this situation, but for anything, particularly if you want to go what we would call a center of excellence. So I would consider 100 surgeons in the country to be 100 separate centers of excellence for how to treat this condition, endometriosis. And so that's just always a plug I do to people. I know it costs more money, but when yourself and one of your loved ones is impacted, you will be ever so thankful that you had options. So I'm looking at the clock, and we have about 6 minutes, 6.5 minutes. So there are, there's two, I know it's amazing. So there's two questions I want to ask. You referenced a couple of times about when you were in high school, missing school and missing work. And that's some things that the Center for the Council on Disability Awareness focuses on, is how illnesses and injuries and diseases, obviously, can impact people's ability to work. And so I know I did some research and found the most recent research article I could find was published in 2018, but they did it on impact to work and life. And they said, on average, and the average is enormous, or I should say the range is enormous, people lose about 5.3 hours per week to endometriosis. And whether that's being absent or unable to do something, or not being able to do it in the way they normally could. And so can you talk a little bit more about how it impacted your ability to work for certain, but also your ability to do things in your own life? I mean, I've met you as a very active person. And can you share with people what that's like?
Of course, yes. So absolutely, there were days missed from work. I mean, days where I had been up all night writhing in pain or had a wicked headache and just felt terrible the next day and knew that I couldn't function to my full capacity. With that being said, fortunately for me, the worst of this came, you know, the 9 months before I finally had excision surgery, was actually around the same time that I took a new job or a new position at my job. And it was a leadership role. It was administrative. And I was putting so much time and energy into that, that it was depleting me to the point where I couldn't function in life outside of work. So I think the new job gave me drive to get up every single day when I was miserable mentally and physically, but I had a purpose. So I got up and I would go to work 4 days a week, but I came home and then I was useless. I was on the couch with a heat pack and taking ibuprofen more than I've ever taken in my life. And luckily I had a husband who could pick up the pieces, but it wasn't good for our relationship. And it was taking a toll on all of us. And I just can't help but think of women who are supporting themselves, single mothers, or women who are single and alone and don't have somebody to help them emotionally or physically. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I didn't do my own laundry. I was really kind of a useless outside of work. I had, you know, the ability to get there and do that, but that was kind of my purpose in life. And I have often thought about, if I hadn't taken that new job, where would I be? Because I think I would have given up. I think I wouldn't have wanted to get up anymore every single day. So it's funny how timing works out like that. But prior to that position, I definitely missed a ton of work. I definitely would call out, you know, I said it used to be a week at a time that I would feel crummy, but then it became 3 weeks out of the month. So it was affecting me so much so that I actually, my words to my husband were, I either have to find a surgeon who can help me or who believes my pain and my symptoms, or I have to be admitted to a mental institution because something's not right with me. I'm in a very dark place and I'm not myself. And those words were what really like sent the message home. And he was like, we have to do something. So fortunately for me, my something was finding Nancy's Nook and educating myself. And I you know, I've said it to you before, but I've said it to other people. It's embarrassing. I'm a healthcare professional. I've studied science my entire life. I didn't know what endometriosis meant. I thought it just meant bad periods, painful bleeding, painful sex.
Right.
It was an excuse to me. And I think, unfortunately, that's what many people think, and that's kind of the stigma. You had mentioned it's a women's disease. Women don't normally talk about their reproductive system. People don't usually want to hear about women's reproductive system. And that's unfortunate, because if we can tie this back to the beginning and talk about the prevalence being the same as diabetes, diabetes isn't always pretty either. And it affects every organ system in the body, just like endometriosis can affect almost every organ system in the body. Everyone's symptoms might present a little bit differently, but it can involve major organ systems.
I appreciate you sharing all that, particularly your comments about your mental health, because when I looked at this 2018 research study, they looked at lists of symptoms. The more symptoms you have, the more likely you are to be out of work for a period of time. But the number two symptom, pain being number one, was mental health, because people were feeling unaddressed and confused. And so I am so grateful that you're talking about that, because by coincidence, we're live recording this on May 1, which is the beginning of Mental Health Awareness Month, in addition to Disability Insurance Awareness Month. I've committed to talking a lot about mental health. We have 60 seconds, so I'm going to ask for a 30-second headline. Looking back on what you know now, what's the first piece of advice you would give, the number one piece of advice you would give to people?
Educate yourself. Don't trust that the doctors know exactly what they're talking about. And I don't say that negatively, because I work with physicians every single day, but they're not all experts in what you're experiencing. So be your own advocate, do your own research, and find the specialist in the area that you need. So for me, it was endometriosis. Nancy's Nook saved my life. I wish I would have found that resource earlier. If people are struggling, endowhat.com, go look at the documentary. It is life-changing.
Thank you so much, Tanya. for being our guest. This, I think, in my opinion, this is the best show we've ever done. For everyone who's listening, we hope this has helped you. And want to say thank you to all of our listeners. Have a great day, and there'll be a transcript that accompanies this so you can get all of the information. We'll make sure there's links for all of it. Thank you again, Tanya.
Thank you for having me. Such a great topic.